welcome to episode number 35 of Golf Pod Kentucky, presented by TaylorMade. Thank you for being here. My name is Ethan Fisher. I'm the Director of Communications and Marketing at Golf House Kentucky. And on this episode, we have Jared Wolf, and this has been a long sought after episode. I've been trying to get Jared on here for most of the month of November, and just because of his schedule on the PGA Tour, it was difficult to do, but the week of Thanksgiving and a rare off week on tour offered the opportunity, and we took advantage. So I think you'll really enjoy this episode. We talk a lot about stuff on the PGA Tour, how we got there after a long several years of playing on the Korn Ferry Tour and other mini tours. But we'll get to Jared in a second. First of all, some other news and notes from Kentucky Golf to discuss. All of the players of the year within the Golf House Kentucky organizations have been confirmed and were announced earlier in November. The winners of the Rolex Kentucky PGA Players of the Year, we have Andrew Stevens winning the Larry Gilbert Player of the Year for the second straight year. Bruce Oldendick, also a consecutive time winner, having won the Senior Award. And then Nick Johnston wins the Assistance Championship. On the amateur body side, our KGA Players of the Year are Jensen Castle as Women's Player of the Year. Andy Roberts won two, including Men's Overall Player of the Year. Tom Campbell, 50-59 Player of the Year. Philip Harper, 60-69 Player of the Year. And Jim Cottle winning the 70-plus Player of the Year. Lastly, our Golf House Kentucky Junior Players of the Year, we have Matthew Troutman, who was just on this podcast, winning the Boys Award, and Trinity Beth, the upstart eighth grader, winning the Girls Player of the Award. So congratulations to all of them. We have mentioned them a number of times on this podcast for everything that they've done throughout the year. So congrats to all of them, and we appreciate their support and patronage of our respective organizations throughout the tournament season. Some cool notes on the corporate side. Clark's Pump and Shop has re-upped as a big-time partner of the KGA with a extension of our agreement that will run through 2024. With that, Clark's Pump and Shop remains the title sponsor of the State Am and State Mid-Am. In addition, they are also now going to be the title sponsor of the Women's State Am, the Women's Senior Am, and the Men's Senior Amateur. So in all, five tournaments, five of the biggest amateur competitions in the state will all be titled by Clark's Pump and Shop, and we are very grateful for their support. Pinseeker made a very generous donation to the KGF recently. They generated more than $11,000 worth of a donation to us, and we talk a lot about the KGF on here and how much it means in terms of getting people into golf, and this is a massive move in terms of getting more people exposed to golf and in love with the sport. And thanks to Pinseeker, who is a Kentucky-based business, we are more set to do that, and we cannot thank them enough for that. And we encourage you to seek out their services. Again, they are located right here in Kentucky, so you're supporting a small business and a local small business at that. Some hiring at Golf House Kentucky will be taking place over the next month or so. We have a couple of internships that are open for application. Our tournament operations interns are being sought after. We have three of those spots available in which people will be doing KGA, KPGA, and Kentucky PGA Junior Tour events throughout the summer. We are also looking for a media intern who would be working with me and assisting with this podcast and essentially telling the story of what's happening at tournaments. So you can apply for those. Job descriptions can be found at kygolf.org. You'll find where to send the job applications to, and we will follow up with you shortly thereafter once you send your materials in. Additionally, we are also looking for one full-time person at Golf House Kentucky right now who would be our operations coordinator. The bulk of this job is going to entail course rating and completing that process across the state. More information, again, can be found at kygolf.org. You'll find the full job description there, the benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And we hope you'll apply. Throughout the month of November, PGA National Day of Hope has been taking place. Originally running through Veterans Day, it has been extended and has gone through the end of November. We've generated more than $3,000 already in terms of donations to PGA Hope throughout this process. And if you have donated, thank you so much. It means a lot. Again, PGA Hope is our military flagship program. This program brings military veterans together and gets them exposed to golf, and it's a very cool thing. Again, I've maintain that maybe the best place to go in terms of hearing direct feedback about how much of an impact it can have is the episode I did earlier this summer with Gregory Mack Jr. That was done in late June. If you listen to that and get his take on PJ Hope, I think you'll understand why this is so important to people. But again, thank you all for your donations, and we're looking forward to continuing our Hope program's impact throughout 2022 and beyond. Some upcoming stuff to note. Next week is the Deaver Easy Go Fall Member Conference and the Kentucky Golf Hall of Fame induction ceremony. The Fall Member Conference takes place Monday, December 6th. The Hall of Fame induction ceremony is Thursday, December 9th, both of which will take place at Griffin Gate Marriott in Lexington. If you're a PGA member and you have not signed up for the Fall Member Conference already, please do so quickly. The registration deadline is this week, so please sign up sooner than later. And then also, if you're interested in attending the Hall of Fame, that is something you can do. Email Connie, that is C-S-A-N-E-R at kygolf.org. That is Connie Sainer's email address. Indicate that you're looking for tickets, and you can get them accordingly. But we're looking forward to celebrating each of our inductees next Thursday. And then with the Fall Member Conference, the centerpiece of this meeting will be the elections for the Kentucky PGA. And then we'll also have some afternoon education provided by Joe Hallett of the Tennessee section in Vanderbilt Legends Club. Last thing to note, and this will kind of serve as a segue into the portion with Jared Wolf. The schedule for this podcast has been a little turned over lately. I certainly did not plan on going just about off November without putting out a new podcast, but that's just how it worked. Appreciate your all's patience. Hopefully it hasn't been too depressing not having this podcast in your life, but it's back now, and there won't be a podcast next week because of the member conference and the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. But after that, either the ensuing week or maybe the week leading up into Christmas, we will have a 2021 Best Of podcast where we just have snippets of funny, meaningful, serious, profound moments throughout the podcast in its first year. There will be 35 episodes to choose from at that point. So there should be a lot of good sound bites and just kind of recirculate a lot of the good things that have been said on this podcast from our many guests throughout the year. And with that, Jared Wolf will be the last person who will be in that Best Of podcast. And without further delay, here he is, Mr. Wolf.
The newly promoted PGA Tour member, Jared Wolf of Louisville, Kentucky, is now on the podcast. And Jared, thanks a lot for being here. How was your Thanksgiving?
Hey, man, thanks so much for having me on. Thanksgiving was great, relaxing, not too busy. Hope yours went well also.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. But here we are. You have played five events on the PGA Tour now, and now that you've kind of gotten maybe a little settled in, having just made your first cut at the RSM, what's it been like being on the PGA Tour for a few months?
It's been pretty cool, man. It's been a lot of fun to kind of come to fruition everything that I've been working for since I was a kid. And, we haven't seen the immediate success, but, I've very rarely ever seen immediate success in anything I do with golf. But it's a lot of fun, man. Just the whole experience of how the tournaments treat you, the fans, the food, the cars, everything they do is first class, and it's been a great experience so far.
So after spending several years on mini tours and the PGA tours, we'll call it AAA leagues, now that you have gotten to the PGA Tour, what are the big things you've noticed that are different from everything else you've played in professional golf?
Everything just seems a little busier. There's more distractions going on. Everything from, say Korn Ferry Tour, there's security to just basically get into the golf course or the parking lot or what have you. After that, there may not be that much. But at ours, it's every door you go in, there's another, there's another security guard, or there's another, barrier you have to get through. So your credential always has to be making sure it's being shown, like just little things like that. But being on the golf course and having multiple carts driving around. You've got shot link going on. You've got volunteers, scores, media, different things like that going around. So there's just a lot more, kind of in your visuals that you have to narrow down out of.
Something I'm curious about that I've heard lots of people who have gone from the KFT onto the PGA Tour say before is how good of a job it prepares you. And that a lot of people say it's not as different as a fan might think when you go from one to the other, just because they try to build the KFT so much like the PGA Tour. Do you kind of fall into that boat? And if so, what is it about the Korn Ferry Tour that is so good about preparing you for life on the PGA Tour?
I think you're spot on in that. What those other people have said are true, that Korn Ferry Tour talent wise is right there. The guys at the top every week, those guys could compete on the PGA Tour every week too. You have the golf course setups, they've done a lot better job in the last few years, getting better golf courses, making sure they're in better shape, making sure greens are running fast and a little more firm. There for the majority though, that's kind of the biggest difference as you go from these golf courses where, it's typically 20 to 22 under wins on our Korn Ferry Tour events, minus, a couple of events here and there. So we're on the PGA, I've had a couple of events so far where it's been like that, but the majority of them, aren't that way, just because the course setups are a little harder, a little more penalizing for being in the rough, and different things like that. But the Korn Ferry Tour does a great job with, just preparing you travel-wise. You got some international play. They do a great job with the media. I've noticed that, the media hasn't changed much differently. And granted, I haven't played well enough to be in much of the media, but there has been, those first couple events, some things with being a Korn Ferry Tour graduate they highlight. So, just kind of preparing you for how that experience goes. And it's basically a mirror tour. It's just on a much smaller scale. It's maybe, 30 or 40% to scale of what the PGA Tour is.
Gotcha. So if we go back to your 2020 on the Korn Ferry Tour, I've said this before, if there was one person who maybe got shafted more than anyone by the pandemic in the golf world, it might have been you with how well you were playing in the late winter, early spring of 2020. You won at Bahamas by 4, and then you won later on in 2020 in Kansas. But obviously with the pandemic delaying the promotion of KFT members, you didn't get on the tour until a year later from what you would have. But in 2020, what was it that clicked that kind of got you to that point, winning and contending on such a frequent basis?
I think it was a lot to do with that early success. Kind of put me into a better mind frame for the rest of the year, the confidence to know that, that I've got the game to do it, and that the state of what my game is in at that point is good enough to win. And I could just keep trying to work on smaller things to make it a little bit better here and there. Coach Corey Kaufman and I worked on a few things that off season, to get the swing a little more consistent, which is what we're all trying to do every day anyway. But something clicked for me a little bit with that during the first few weeks. And we really didn't veer off from that feeling or that swing thought for most of the year. We just kind of worked on short game and things like that. But that, just gave me a lot of confidence. Winning that second event, and then not just that, but winning it by 4 or 3 or 4 was really kind of a good explanation. Good exclamation mark on it for the week to build that confidence for the rest of the year.
So when you found out that you weren't going to be getting on the PGA Tour in 2020 and that you'd have to wait a year, obviously it's something completely out of your control, but how did you temper the emotions of dealing with that, knowing that you've finally gotten it together and then just a once in a lifetime circumstance comes up and delays you? How hard was that to take?
It was pretty hard to take, up front, but a lot of it was just the unknowns of what the tours were going to be doing. We had no idea what the PGA Tour was wanting to do, which obviously, bleeds into our tour and determines what we do. I think the biggest concern was that, you know, we're like, well, are they going to reset the points and basically start the season over again? Which thankfully that got squashed pretty quick when we brought those questions up. But, you know, just having that unknown about, well, okay, you know, you say it's going to be like this, but every 2 weeks things change. So what, you know, it just is constantly changing and all that. But I told a few people after a while, I was like, I can't complain about it. There's nothing I can do. But I'd waited 10 years for this, so I can wait another 8 months, you know, as long as I know it's coming. And then, you know, not when we came back from that break, you know, thankfully I won in Wichita. And then we had our off season and I came back and I wasn't playing that well. So pretty happy that, you know, I'm pretty happy that maybe I wasn't jumping onto the tour right away. You know, at the start of the 2021 year, it didn't get off to a very hot start. So, you know, I was just trying to look at it the most optimistic way I could after the first, maybe, you know, 2 weeks of questions and unknowns and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, makes total sense. And being on tour now, it's not like things are a complete breeze for you and that you have your schedule set. You've had to do a lot of Monday qualifying, some that's been successful, some that hasn't been. And in those cases where you're not successful, there have been a couple of times already where you've kind of been teetering on the alternate list and ended up getting into the tournament literally 2 hours, I think, and as was the case in Houston, 2 hours before your tee time. What is it dealing with that when you don't really know if you're going to be playing and you're just kind of living on the teeter-totter from city to city?
Yeah, honestly, though, that's kind of how I spent most of my Korn Ferry career until 2020, 2021. So I'm kind of used to it, but it still doesn't take away the stresses with it. You know, the parts that kind of suck with it is of, you know, trying to figure out your travel, but, you know, your numbers in that, you know, you're in like a week before, 2 weeks before, and then out of nowhere, you know, 3 days before the commitment deadline, you're bounced out, you know, and well, now your Airbnb is already, you know, non-refundable, it's over with, and, you know, things like that. So it's interesting, but, you know, then you get those moments, like you said, in Houston, where I'm on the range, I've got the car packed up, I've already got my flight booked for the next morning. You know, I was fourth alternate on Tuesday and ended up being second alternate by Wednesday night and then first alternate Thursday morning. I was like, you know, I can't keep moving. There's no way. And then somebody backed out. Like you said, I was on the range at 2:15 and got a text that said you're on the tee at 3:00. So it's just, this guy, you know, it's just weird. But you just roll with it, you know, there's nothing you can do. Just roll with it and try to take advantage of the opportunities. And if you do get into a Monday qualifier, you know, I mean, you know, the odds are against you. So, you know, don't leave your head down when you finish, but if you don't make it, but, you know, take advantage of it when you do. And, you know, in Shriners, I felt like I was on my way to taking advantage of that. And, you know, ultimately ended up missing the cut, but still got a lot of confidence from that week.
Yeah, when you shoot 60, and I was looking at the tweet earlier from the PGA Tour, when you say that you had a good chance of shooting 58, I can see why that would build confidence. But I asked Josh Teeter a similar question earlier in this spring, but if you were going to compare the pressures of when you have a putt on the 18th green to qualify from a Monday queue to make a cut in a tournament on Friday and then a putt to win a tournament, if you were to rank those 1, 2, and 3, how would you, which one has the most pressure associated with it and which one would have the quote unquote least pressure with it?
I think the most pressure one would probably be, I'd say making the cut would be one. Making the putt for the Monday qualifier would be 2, and then making the putt to win would be 3.
Now, I think the easy answer to that is the fact that if you have a putt to win in your current situation, even if you miss it and you finish solo second, per se, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're going to get a lot of FedEx Cup points. But why do you think that is, that making the cut has the most pressure to it?
It's got, you know, you've got all the expenses. You're there, you know, or you've you've paid all the money, you got your caddy there, might even have family there. And you put in all this time and effort for 3 days getting ready for the event, and then you have this, those 2 days, and you're like, man, I'd really like to get, you know, some reward out of this week. I'd like to, you know, I'd like to see some sort of a reward for this week. And, you know, like you said, if you're putting for a win, obviously there's a lot of pressure there, but you do have that fallback of like, okay, you know, if I don't make this, then I'm still ahead this week pretty good. You know, it still would, don't get me wrong, it would still be a tough pill to swallow, you know, for a while, but probably it would probably have a longer lasting, like, in your brain than missing a putt on either of those other two situations. But over the ball, I wouldn't feel as nervous about it. You know, but it, making that putt on a Monday qualifier too, like knowing 6 under is the cut line and you've got 8 feet for you know, 7 under to get out of that cut line and get into the tournament, you know, is also pretty stressful too.
Pressing pause button on the discussion with Jared here for a minute. Throughout the month of December, we will be doing our holiday shopping, and as has become kind of the 21st century thing, a lot of your holiday shopping is inevitably going to be done through Amazon, and Amazon Smile is a great place to go to if you're looking on giving back to the community. You put forth no extra money, but a portion of your purchase will automatically go to a charity of your choice, and we would appreciate if you would consider choosing the Kentucky Golf Foundation for that selection. And with that, there will be a lot of golf clubs, golf equipment, anything that will be bought throughout this next month. And TaylorMade is a great place to look with new clubs coming out in early 22. Now is a great chance to buy some materials at discounted rates. Whether you're looking for a new driver, a new putter, new golf ball, new golf bag, TaylorMade's going to have you covered. So again, go to Amazon Smile and search for TaylorMade equipment. Make your purchase, and by doing so, you will be making an impact on people's lives through the game of golf, and you will also be making your friends and family happy after you buy them a new TaylorMade product. With that, let's go ahead and get back to Jared Wolf.
With the PGA Tour season, I'm curious what you think about this. I'm as big a golf fan as there is, but I have hardly watched any golf ever since the Ryder Cup, just because mentally I really can't take a whole lot more golf after watching it nonstop from basically January through September. From a playing perspective, do you wish that the off season was more elongated? Because right now, up until the beginning of January, this is about the only off season you're going to find. And even then, you're still probably going to play a couple of little events here and there. Do you wish you had a more structured off season, or do you like being in this boat of playing week by week all year?
Yeah, I think there's two different ways you can look at it. And I think if you look at it from a player, in my perspective, or maybe one of those, you know, so-called journeymen, or somebody that's, you know, that didn't finish top 70 on the FedEx Cup or top 30 on the FedEx Cup. Myself, I'd like to keep playing. Granted, I haven't played a full season on the tour yet, where I've played, you know, 30 events and traveled all over the place and that kind of thing. I went 3 years without a real off season, because I bounced around so many different tours and Q schools and things like that. So when I finally had one, I enjoyed it, but I was also playing for, you know, a 10th down to like a 40th of the money that we're playing for. So, you know, the reward at each one of these weeks is so big that, you know, especially if, you know, you haven't won yet and you're trying to win to get into the Masters, or win to get in win to get onto something else, or, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I want to keep playing. But if I was in the other situation where I'd be like, look, you know, I've won twice this year, or, you know, I've played the FedEx Cup, I've played all the majors, I'm tired, I'm worn out, things like that, then I'd be like, yeah, give me 2 months. You know, and I think ultimately we might end up getting back to that. I think the tour might do something like that. I haven't heard any rumblings of it, but I would think, you know, the pendulum swings as, you know, time goes on. We went from not many events to, you know, now there's one basically every week. Some weeks there's two. to a probably, you know, pendulum might swing back to, you know, instead of 45 events or 43 events, it might, drop down to 30 something. Who knows where they're going to go with it. But they're, they're competing with NFL. They're competing with college football right now. We've got one event scheduled. I think Farmers is going to end on a Saturday because of, I can't remember if it's the Super Bowl or if it's whatever it is. I can't remember what it is. So things like that. So I know the tour itself doesn't want to compete with those kind of things and lose finances. And, you know, they don't want their players not getting the exposure they need, that kind of thing. So I know that's a very long-winded, elaborated answer for your question. Personally, myself, I'm fine with about 3 or 4 weeks off. And then, cool, let's go back at it. Have some fun. At least, right now where I'm at in my career, that's where I'm at.
Gotcha. No, I love the thought given. That's really interesting. So what does your December look like in terms of playing golf? Obviously, the Sony Open in early January is going to kind of be that resumption point of getting back to playing week in and week out. But in between now and then, what are you going to be doing?
Between now and then, I've got a fun event that Lynn Matisse does here down at TPC Sawgrass with the junior, a bunch of junior golfers. So we're going to do that one day coming up. And then they do a fun pro-am that's put on by he's a former CEO of a Kushnender Titleist, Henry Tootin. He puts on a tournament pro-am that sponsors like scholarships for juniors as well. So we'll play that at Sea Island coming up as well. So I've got two things pretty much lined up. I might try to find one more small event to go play in to get the juices going before we head out west to start the year up.
Nice. Now, we talked about the season length, but maybe the other big discussion point in professional golf right now is the talk about breakaway leagues. And there are so many at this point that I've kind of lost track of how many there are and how one separates itself from the other. But I've heard a lot of thoughts from guys like Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, those types of players who are at the top of the world rankings. But from your perspective as someone who's working your way up, what does the possibility of a breakaway league mean for somebody like you? Is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? Something you'd be interested in? What's your take on all this talk?
Honestly, as far as interest, my interests are with the PGA Tour. That's what I've grown up with wanting to be on. That's where the majors are at. That's where the records are. It's in the States. I have no interest in going somewhere else to go play golf year-round type deal. But as far as in the grand scheme of things, there's two ways to look at it. From the player side, there might be some pretty big financial opportunities for some of these for some of these bigger names to go and play in and things like that. And I don't know how that's all going to shake out in the end. But what I know it's doing for the PGA Tour right now is the PGA Tour is looking inward on itself and saying, how do we make it better here to keep our players? And now as one of their players, I appreciate that even more, and that they're not just resting on their laurels saying, well, we got the best tour, so everybody's going to stay here. They're taking it serious and they're looking at ways to make sure that, they make it worth the players' while to stay here and play on this tour. So I have no interest in going anywhere. Honestly, haven't even heard if any of these tours are actual, if any ink's been, put on paper yet. I don't know. But I'm sure, I'm sure there'll be a handful of guys that'll take it because, it'll be an offer they can't really refuse. But I really don't think that it's going to be a massive, withdrawal from the PGA Tour of the big names. Personally, I don't think it will be.
Yeah, I listened to, I can't remember his name, someone from, I think it's the Premier Golf League, was on No Laying Up and talked about it. And he said that if they were going to do something, it wouldn't start until probably the second half of 2023 at the earliest. So probably a long ways down the road. But you mentioned that if a few guys do go play in them, there's been talk about possible bans from both the PGA Tour and major championships. I think I remember Seth Wash saying at Kiawa Island this year that anyone who did that would be basically forbidden from playing in the PGA Championship going forward. Do you think that would be something that the organizations would actually follow through with if players did go that route?
Honestly not sure. I mean, I would hope they would. Because, I mean, you can't make a statement like that and then back down, you know, whether you agree with the statement or not. You can't make a statement like that from a major organization and then back off of it. You know, that starts a slippery slope. But yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if I was the PGA of America or if I was, you know, the PGA Tour, you know, if basically a big time player turns their back on this tour and says, hey, I'm going to go over here because this tour is paying me X amount of money. You know, I think this tour has every right to say, okay, well, if you do that, you know, you've made your decision and, you know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, I don't know what kind of precedent does it set. You know, it's just, thankfully I'm not in that decision. Thankfully they don't ask me, for what that decision's going to be. Cause I don't know what the right answer would be.
Right. Let's break away from that and go back to kind of your junior golf days. So you were born in Louisville. How did you first get into golf and what made it appealing to you?
I first got into golf. My dad and my granddad on my mom's side, they would, they'd play quite frequently, and I saw it as a way to just hang out with them, be around them and, you know, be included. And then I just started to enjoy it. You know, they started with, you know, we go and play Sun Valley or go play Iroquois or Shawnee, Seneca, you know, all the Metro Parks courses. And I would take a putter and just while they're putting, I'd go on the green and putt. Or if they're in the fairway, while my dad's hitting, I would just drop a ball and hit it and then go pick it up. You know, that's when I was real little, until it got to the point where, you know, we really had to make sure I paid to play because I got big enough to play all the holes. And so we jumped on that. I think with the Metro Parks pass, I could play for like whatever it was, like 50 cents a day or something, whatever dollar a day, whatever it used to be back then. So that's how I got into it.
When was the point in your childhood where you kind of realized that you had a knack at this and you were going to try to take it to a college pursuit?
Shoot, man, I thought, this is what's funny, is I was ignorant to what really good golf was. You know, I think we had St. X and Trinity, and those guys were always the ones that were the best. And then, you know, I remember like Matt Savage playing at Florida State, you know, and I thought, wow, you know, that's obviously a different level. I was like, but I didn't know everybody at my age group at the time in high school was breaking par like consistently, that those were the best. So when I got to the point where I could shoot par or even maybe break par, you know, I was winning all the Musselman Dunn tournaments and all that stuff. I was like, yes, I'm going to Wake Forest. I'm going to Duke, or I'm going to Arizona State, where I wanted to go. You know, I was like, that's it. I'm dead set on it. That's what's going to happen. And, you know, I never got a word back from any of those. And as I got older, I realized why. I was like, they don't want anybody that's got a 75 scoring average coming to their college. So, I knew that's what I wanted to do, but I'm kind of happy I didn't know how not good I was at the time. But everybody kept telling me, well, you're going to be good, whatever. And so when Murray State called, my Coach Hunt gets on the phone and he's like, hey man, you know, we got a spot for you. We'd love for you to be here. That was my first call that I got. And I hung up and I was like, there's no way I'm going to Murray. And he said, I'm going to Arizona State. I'm going somewhere else, like whatever. And none of the other phone calls came in, and ended up going to Murray and loved it. But you know, it's probably junior year of high school that I was like, yeah, I can play college golf. I just didn't, like I said, I didn't know I wasn't good enough to go play at those other places.
I love the fact that you played a lot of public courses when you were younger. It's kind of the same boat I was in when I was growing up playing. What's some advice you would give to juniors who do play a lot of public courses and aren't members of a private club in terms of working their way up and wanting to be as successful as you have been with your career?
I'd say, you know, look at the situation as an advantage. Every time I went somewhere and, you know, playing mini tour golf, or even now, you know, we get to a golf course and it's not in perfect shape, man, like, you know, 70% of people are complaining and moaning. They don't know how to hit chip shots off of, you know, dirt. They don't know how to hit shots out of bunkers that have rocks in them. You know, they don't know how to do any of that kind of stuff. You know, you can always learn how to hit perfect shots off of perfect grass at some point, but until then, enjoy all the, you know, four different kinds of grasses by the, you know, next to the green. You know, enjoy putting on the greens, you know, and that's not, none of this is a knock to the Metro Parks courses, because that's what I grew up on. And, you know, Iroquois always had some of the fastest greens, and, you know, Shawnee always had, you know, the fairways you could take these huge divots, and they were always in good shape, and Seneca was long. And so every course had its advantage, but I would say find you a good course. If it's what you're wanting to do is to try to play college golf, talk to the pro there, you know, talk to these guys. Kevin Greenwell took me under his wing. You know, he gave me a place to practice, let me work there, you know, do all those kind of things. And without that kind of opportunity, you know, I don't think I would have played college golf, much less moved on playing professionally.
Very good answer. Now, another advice question. There's a ton of people, both boys and girls, who are really good amateur players and either are finishing college and about to turn pro or have just turned pro and trying to work their way up. What's advice you would give those kinds of players on what they need to do to break through and make it on the PGA Tour or LPGA Tour?
Can't speak too much, I guess, on the LPGA. I've known a couple ladies that have made their way up. But I think you can parallel the two pretty easily. When I came out of college, they did not have PGA Tour Latin America or China or Canada, the McKinsey Tour going on, that bled into the Korn Ferry Tour. So, you know, everything I did was mini tour stuff. And I don't want to say there's one right route to go, but my advice would be to get into some qualifiers, get into some mini tour events, assess where you're at, assess how your game is compared to the ones that are winning, not to the ones you're playing with that you're beating. You know, and heck, if you're the one that goes out and wins all the time, then obviously you're good enough. But, you know, if you can get out there on those tours, learn and see how your game stacks up, figure out what you need to do. And then get into the Q schools, get into McKinsey Tour Q school if you want, or Latin America Tour Q school. You know, if you don't have $6,000 to drop on Korn Ferry, because that's the hardest grind out there. And I've done it however many times, like six or eight times. You know, where I've done Canada and Latin America once each. You know, that $2,500 bill is way less impactful, especially for somebody coming out of college that may not have the financial balance. So anyway, that's my recommendation, would be to, you know, play in some mini tour events if you can, kind of see where your game's at, and then try to hit one of those feeder tours. And so you can kind of learn your way up. You don't really want to go, at least in my opinion, and the way I was, I went straight from mini tour golf to Korn Ferry Tour. And I was not ready, even though it was like 4 years into playing mini tour golf, I wasn't ready. And I got out there and I made two cuts in 17 events and, you know, made like $3,000. That was it. You know, and lost a lot of confidence, got frustrated and that kind of stuff. So, if you can find that route, gain some confidence, get some money in your pocket from these winning some mini tour events or things like that, and then move up and keep going.
Wise words. All right, to finish this off, we're going to do our rapid fire game, which is lots of quick golf or non-golf questions. You don't have to give an explanation or a reason for any of these answers. Just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. So what is your favorite golf course in Kentucky?
Valhalla.
Favorite golf course outside of Kentucky?
Pebble Beach.
What is your dream threesome on the PGA Tour?
Justin Thomas and Ricky.
If you're playing a normal round of golf, not in a tournament, are you going to walk or ride?
Oh, I'm going to ride. I'm lazy.
What's your favorite golf movie?
Happy Gilmore.
This next one is especially fitting since we're recording this on the game day of UK and Louisville. But if you were going to pick one or the other, are you a UK fan or a Louisville fan?
I have no shame in it whatsoever. I'm a Louisville fan. Never been a UK fan. Much respect to everybody who's listening that is. Please don't hate me. But I really hope that they don't win today.
Well, when this episode comes out, the people will know the answer. So we'll see how this holds up in a couple of days. Who is the better golfer, Tiger Woods or Jack Nicklaus?
You would. Tiger.
Excluding majors, which regular PGA Tour event are you most excited to play?
Probably Farmers, Torrey Pines.
Last question for you. What is your dream vacation spot for you and your family?
Ooh. Oh, used to be Australia. you can edit that out if you need to. honestly, anywhere we can go that gets us away from, you know, from what we do every day. We live in a vacation spot, but you know, I'll go anywhere with my wife and daughter. That's enough for me. Anywhere we go.
Yeah. Well, on the Australia front, I've got a good friend who moved there with his wife during COVID, actually, and talking to them in terms of what their lives have been like, even with the pandemic, hopefully on its regression. It's interesting, the life that they have to live there.
Yeah, very, very interesting. That was hands down the map where we wanted to go the most, but yeah, not anymore, or at least not right now, maybe one day.
Yeah, it could be a while. I've told people that I don't like snakes. I don't like spiders. So there's not a whole lot of interest in Australia for me personally, but I'd like to play Royal Melbourne. And then after that, I'd be totally content getting on a flight and getting back to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. If you want to use this answer, now that I've had to answer this before and I forgot about this answer, like a culinary tour of Europe, like have my wife and daughter and we go on a culinary tour around different parts of Europe. That'd be a dream vacation.
Yeah, that would be fun. All right, Jared, I don't have anything else for you. Thank you so much for coming on here. I really appreciate it. You know, obviously we're wishing you the best of luck in this ensuing PGA Tour season or ongoing PGA Tour season would probably be the better word for it. But you've done awesome work. You're a very good inspiration for golfers all across Kentucky, and we're very glad to claim you as one of our own. But again, thank you for coming on here, Jared.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I do have to give one more shout out to Corey Taylor, who helped me out and still does. We still work together with fitness, who helped me out ever since I was in college and couldn't do a push-up or barely, you know, do anything. And, you know, Corey Kaufman, like I said, helping me out with the golf swing. So, you know, two Kentucky guys there and everything Kevin Greenwell did for me. So I thank the Kentucky PGA and everything that they've done as well, and all the opportunities you all have given us.